You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. If you're online or using an app, chances are there's an algorithm recommending what you read, watch, or listen to next. With the rise of social media and platforms like YouTube, Netflix, and Spotify, algorithms have come to shape our experience online in a profound way, and our next guest says it's shaping our lives offline, too. You could join in at 800-642-1234. When you're on social media or a streaming service, do you find that you're getting good stuff recommended to you, stuff that you want to see? Or is it just more and more of the same thing you liked already? Do you keep watching that sort of stuff? Do you wish you could break out of that somehow? Join in at 800-642-1234. And if you find cool stuff in other ways, from friends or a critic or something, where do you go for those independent suggestions of what to watch or read? Join in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Kyle Chayka is a staff writer for The New Yorker covering technology and culture on the internet. His new book is called Filter World, How Algorithms Flattened Culture. Kyle, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start big picture before we start prying open these algorithms. What is it like living in filter world? What do you mean by that concept?
Yeah, I mean, as you introduced in the show, we're now surrounded by all of these algorithmic recommendations. And these are digital platforms that are pushing content at us, constantly telling us what we should be watching or what we might be interested in. The next song on Spotify, the next video on TikTok, a show to watch on Netflix. And I just wanted to come up with a word to describe how we're being bombarded by these recommendations all the time.
And with algorithms, whether they use in culture, which is what you're focusing on, or whatever, there's a sense, I think, oh, it's like math and science, so we're getting the right answer to this. A big key point of your book is they were created in every instance with a human intention, with an outcome that the creators are hoping for. Lift the veil behind the algorithms that shape our cultural lives.
Absolutely. I think we often forget that the algorithms we interact with online are decisions made by tech companies. So it's not just an equation that perfectly measures your interests and your tastes and gives you what you're going to be interested in. But instead, it's this equation that helps the tech company make more profit. So in the case of Spotify, it's that you keep listening to songs. On Facebook, it's that you're engaging with the articles that are in your feed and you're constantly looking for more. So I think it really helps to keep in mind what incentives we're looking at here.
And you have this idea of algorithms flattening our culture. What do you mean by flattening?
I think there's this overall homogenization going on. And I think it's happening because all of these equations are essentially programmed to give us more of what we're already interested in. So Spotify will give you more songs that are kind of like the songs you already like. X or Twitter will give you more tweets that kind of follow what you've shown that you're interested in. And I think over time, it's kind of like a funnel where all the users on a platform are being funneled into these buckets of content that follow certain themes that they've expressed interest in. And I think it's hard to break out of this system. It's hard to say to the algorithm, I don't want more of the same thing. Like, I want to get some different perspectives or get a different kind of content.
Now, of course, when you say algorithm and all this, I think of online stuff. But one of your starting points, actually, in an article you wrote years ago, was in the real world. And it was that cool local coffee shop looks the same as that cool local coffee shop in another state, another country, another continent. Could you talk us through how that flattened out, in part based on algorithms?
Right. I mean, I noticed this phenomenon, I think, starting around 2015, 2016, that all these quote unquote local coffee shops, wherever I went, tended to look the same. And this was, you know, no matter if I'm in the United States or in China or Germany or anywhere else, the coffee shop had this look that was like white subway tiles on the walls, lumpy ceramic mugs with, you know, latte art in them, brightly colored blobby posters on the walls. And I think that generic quality, it wasn't because a parent company was telling coffee shop owners to decorate their places the same way, like a Starbucks. It was because suddenly in the 2010s, we all got sucked into these massive digital platforms and we all started following each other and chasing the same trends and looking at the same aesthetics. And that creates an overall flattening over time because we're all just kind of following the same ideas and following the same algorithmic currents. So our tastes harmonize, as one person told me.
Kyle Chayka is with us. We're talking about his new book. It's called Filter World, How Algorithms Flattened Culture. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Kyle, most of us are using social media platforms, things like that, as consumers, but you also look at how this affects creators. And if there's an algorithm that says, hey, this is the kind of thing I'm going to put in front of people, creators, if they want their stuff to be seen, are kind of chasing the algorithm, which is easier said than done. What did you find when you looked into that?
It's so true. I mean, I think as consumers, so much of our attention is mediated by these feeds. Like we're watching and listening to what the algorithms recommend to us. And so if you're an artist, like a musician or a painter or, you know, a choreographer, you have to think about what is going to work on these platforms. So you have to think about what looks good on Instagram, what kind of dance moves are going to play well on TikTok, what kind of music is going to be picked up as a viral TikTok sound. And those are kind of the commercial demands of our time, I think. I mean, even as an author, publishers would ask me, how many followers do you have on Twitter? You know, how many people are already in your audience online? So I think our presences online as creators and the trends going on these platforms really shape how we make our art.
And not just art, but also media. I think we're going to have a training in the works on the dreaded SEO, search engine optimization, here at Wisconsin Public Radio. You talked about at one point in your life somehow, and I didn't quite get how this worked, working what looked like wedding announcements into some of your work to try to get picked up and get SEO optimized. This also shapes how we try to deliver news to people.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that particular anecdote was from Facebook in like the early 2010s. And people had figured out that if you pretended to announce a wedding or an engagement, you would get boosted by the algorithm. Because obviously the algorithm registers this wedding or engagement idea and is like, okay, tons of people are going to want to see this. And rather than actually announcing a wedding, you would be like, here's my wedding announcement. Yay, congratulate me. But here's actually my new news story that I just wrote. And so it would be a hack in a way. You were trying to hack the algorithm. But it was so hard to tell what would actually work and what wouldn't. I think over time, we all develop these superstitions about algorithmic recommendations.
And that points to a big point in your book is, and other people noted this, a lack of transparency in algorithms, whether they stay the same for years or Facebook makes a big change or whatever. We, the consumers at least, don't know what is driving what's being shown to us. How big a problem do you see that?
Oh, it's such a big problem. I mean, there's so much opacity. I mean, people literally describe algorithms as black boxes. We're interacting with these digital platforms, whether it's Facebook or Instagram or TikTok, or even a news app like Apple News. And we literally can't tell how they're working. We can't tell how they're recommending us stories or pieces of content. And we can't tell when they change. And they change a lot. These algorithmic recommendations and the equations that drive them are always changing. The variables are always a little different. And when they do change, we sense that there's this huge difference in the system without necessarily being told. Like in recent years, Instagram really changed from promoting still images, like photos, to promoting videos. And no one said that out loud. But if you posted a video, you would get tons of promotion. And obviously, if you want to get that attention, if you want to promote your work or your life update, you're going to post that video. So it really shapes and dictates almost what you're putting out there.
It's a black box to us as consumers. But as we started off, it's not such a black box for the people creating it. They know what their goal is and what they're trying to nudge us toward. More and more, that seems to stuff that's going to serve their advertisers.
Absolutely. So, I mean, how most digital platforms work is that they sell advertising. So you are not paying Facebook money. Instead, Facebook is surveilling what you look at, what stories you click on, what you buy, and then selling that data to advertisers who want to get your attention as well. So I think it also helps to remember the sole purpose, like the ultimate goal of all of these systems, is to sell more advertising. It's not to give you a better experience or deliver the thing that you're going to be most inspired by. It's literally to just track you better and sell you more ads.
Kyle Chayka is with us, staff writer at The New Yorker, covering technology and culture on the internet. We're talking about his new book, Filter World, How Algorithms Flatten Culture. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're willing to share your streaming, TV streaming experience or music streaming, say, or YouTube watching or whatever, is there a platform that you think gives you the content that you want pretty reliably, or do you find it unsatisfying? Does it seem to be to you like it's trying to get more money out of you over time? Or if you have ways of finding cool stuff, whether it's music or TV or movies, whatever, where do you go for it? Who is your source if it's not an online algorithm? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Kyle Chayka, author of the new book, Filter World, How Algorithms Flattened Culture. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you ever taken time off of technology to avoid algorithms? Do you think platforms like Facebook or search engines like Google are doing a good job of connecting you with content you wanted to find and that you enjoy? Or do you think the recommendations are getting worse? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring in a caller now. Nick is with us in Beloit. Nick, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What do you want to tell us about?
I'm doing all right. I find that like a lot of things I like are on specific channels or the people in the stores themselves. So like book reviews, I find, I always talk to this one guy at Barnes Noble who works there. He always just knows everything. But if I have a channel online, I want to say the KEXP channel on YouTube or like the NPR Tiny Desk concerts, they'll seem to just pick the right things.
Interesting, Nick. Thanks a lot. And Kyle, Nick is finding things that a person at the store or the record store or something like NPR's Tiny Desk concert. You write about this in the book, where to look for inspiration and new stuff that isn't driven by an algorithm.
Yeah, I love this because it just speaks to how the original recommendation engine was another person, ideally an expert in whatever you're looking for. So it's great to go to the bookstore and ask a clerk at the store for a recommendation because they're going to know, you know, what the new books are, what you might be interested in. And that's a more human relationship and interaction than going on the Amazon homepage. Or connecting with a really cool cultural institution like KEXP, which is a radio station that produces really cool concert videos and puts them on YouTube. So I think, I mean, it's a good point also that you don't have to get offline to avoid algorithms. Like you can seek out really cool human curators, as I call them in the book, and people with really great taste and just consume what they post online as well.
Thanks a lot for that call, Nick, at 800-642-1234. That trip to the bookstore, Kyle, reminds me, you took kind of a surreal bookstore visit at an Amazon brick-and-mortar bookstore. Describe that for me. I've never been to one of these. It sounds weird.
It was very weird, and I have to preface this with, I think Amazon has now closed all of their bookstores because they were so unpleasant. But it was, you walked into the bookstore and all of the books, for one thing, were facing outwards. So you could just see thousands of covers everywhere, which was very chaotic. And the books were all organized by their kind of data on the Amazon website. So the books were sorted by what ratings they got, how many people read them, you know, whether they got a lot of good comments on the review section. And it just struck me as so strange because this was essentially bringing the digital experience into reality. And it just underlined how unpleasant that is. Like, I don't care when I'm in a bookstore. I don't care how many other people have bought a book. I don't care what the star rating is. What I'm really engaged with is what's in that book. Like, or do the people in the store like it? Like I personally look for those staff recommendation you know, little pieces of paper underneath the books. So yeah, it just showed that the variables we measure on the internet for culture really don't stand up in the real world. And if we see them, you know, outside the physical world, it actually seems quite bizarre.
Talking to Kyle Chayka about his new book, Filter World, How Algorithms Flattened Culture. Kyle, I could see there being an argument like, okay, yeah, now it's algorithms. Back in the day, it was advertisers and marketing departments and network officials kind of figuring out a lowest common denominator where we could bring people in and flattening culture in a different way. Do you think that's a fair comparison?
I think so. I mean, it's hard to say that one era is better or worse than another. I think in this era, algorithms have really taken over that role. And I think, you know, there are good and bad qualities to those kind of human gatekeepers too. So on the bad side, like the record label executive or the museum curator or the bookstore buyer, like they tend to ignore a lot of people. They might have their own blind spots in terms of like race or class, certainly. So there's flaws there for sure. But also what they are uniquely capable of doing is introducing a new voice into culture and just kind of picking something out based on their own taste and saying this thing is something that more people should see. And I think that had a way of highlighting more unusual or radical or interesting pieces of culture than what we're facing right now, which is essentially the tyranny of data. Like what we end up seeing the most is what is the most already popular. Like that Amazon store, like the metric is always what the most other people have clicked on is what you are going to be most likely to see or hear or watch.
Now, another element of the flattening of culture I'm reading in your book, Kyle, is the idea of good enough. So like the algorithm recommends something that's kind of like something else I liked, whether it's Netflix or YouTube or whatever. And that's fine. I'll go with that. I may not get that radically cool new thing, but I won't get that radically awful bad thing that doesn't fit with what I like. So we just kind of settle into this. And it isn't always fun. When I realize I'm there, I don't like it that much. You either.
I think there's an averageness to that. I talk about the quality of being ambient in the book a lot. And this is a word that the musician Brian Eno came up with in the 70s. And it referred to stuff that was as ignorable as it is interesting. So you could easily ignore it and just like not really pay attention to it. And it would be pleasant enough. You could have it in the background. But then again, it wouldn't necessarily be so interesting. It wouldn't move you. It might not upset you. So I think we're kind of settling for that average quality. And what we're missing out on is the stuff that you might hate. Like it avoids you being too alienated or turned off by a piece of culture, but it's also lessening that kind of extremely moving, unique experience you have when you encounter a work of art that seems like just made for you and something that's just feels personal.
You did a personal experiment, Kyle. You tried to take some time and break free of algorithms. Talk about that experiment and what you learned.
This was an algorithm cleanse that I did, I think, in late 2022. And this was as I was finishing up writing the book. And I just felt totally overwhelmed by the internet. I'd been thinking about it so deeply for this book. And so basically, I cut myself off from all of these digital platforms that were driven by algorithms. I was not on social media. I wasn't listening to Spotify. I wasn't watching Netflix. And it really forced me to reset my relationship with the internet because so much of the internet is driven by algorithms. And it made me think a lot more about what I was consuming and be more intentional about what I was consuming. So I think overall it was a really healthy move, but the first few weeks were absolutely painful.
You're speaking in the past tense. I assume you've come back to that sort of thing, but do you find having done that you're more intentional about what you consume as opposed to, yeah, let her rip, see what plays next?
I think so. I mean, it did offer that kind of like reset. So I separated myself from the internet a little bit. I think I realized that my identity depended less on it and I didn't need it to inform quite so many of my decisions. So I was able to step back and now I do think I'm a little more intentional, a little more aware of what I'm consuming and just more aware of how things get to me. Like, when you don't have an algorithm delivering you stuff, when you don't have recommendations pushing stuff at you, you have to work harder yourself. You have to seek things out and kind of figure out what you're interested in.
One thing I've loved lately, Kyle, is I have a couple friends who are cooler than me, which is easy to do, who do things on Twitch or Mixcloud with audiences, you know, hovering around 10 people or so, where they share a bunch of music. Some of it I love, some of it I hate. I discover a lot of great new stuff. Do you think we need to do more of that, just sharing with friends in person, online, and curating for each other a little bit?
For sure. I would love more people to curate for each other. I think there's this misconception that like taste or being a curator is somehow a super elite activity that's only for insiders or, you know, tastemakers. But really anyone can do it. It's just about sharing what you like and sharing what makes you inspired or interested. So I love that example of just being on Twitch for 10 people. Like on the internet, we're so often tempted to try for as big audience as possible to try to like go viral or get more likes or whatever. And you really don't need to do that. Like in the rest of history and in our normal lives, reaching 10 people was great. That's like a much more sustainable human interaction than going viral on TikTok or something.
That's a good place to leave it. Kyle, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, this was lovely. Thank you.
That's Kyle Chayka, staff writer at The New Yorker. We've been talking about his new book. It's called Filter World, How Algorithms Flattened Culture. You can still share your thoughts on where you go to discover cool new movies, music, TV shows, whatever. Let us know. Email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org.